thank you all for coming again to the next installment of the of the Hanukkah Shir. So just sort of summarize it, to summarize the topic we're talking about and what we've seen in the last number of weeks. We're dealing with traveling on Hanukkah. Who the chiyuv Neros Hanukkah is on, when you're obligated to do it, and when you could be yotzei with somebody else. So in the last number of weeks, we developed three different approaches to the mitzvah of Neros Hanukkah, all of which have their representation in the acronym. I'm sorry if there aren't enough encouragements. So one approach to the mitzvah was that it's a chobas hayachid. Each individual person is obligated to light for himself. And if you assume like that, then you sort of have to figure out why the Gemara assumes one candle works for the entire household. That was one set of issues. Another approach is that Neros Hanukkah is a chobas habayis. Habayis in the sense of the physical structure. Every physical structure that has Jews living in it requires a candle for Hanukkah. Great. The third approach was that it's not an individual obligation. It's also not an obligation on the structure, but it's chobas habayis in the sense of a household, a family. Each family unit, each group of people living together requires a single candle. So this week, we're going to try to further our understandings of this chobas habayis idea. An obligation on the family unit, on the structure of the household, try to figure out who's part of the household, who's not, and what practical ramifications there are of being part of a household. So the basic Gemara, which we've seen before, is on the back page. It's really just a two-line Gemara. Rav Shesha says, "Achsanai chayiv b'ner Hanukkah." Rav Shesha says, a guest is chayiv to light ner Hanukkah. And if you go over to somebody's house for Hanukkah, you're living there, let's say, for 8 days straight, so you're obligated to light individually by yourself. And we dealt with the ramifications of that statement last week. This week we're going to focus more on Rav Zira. Rav Zira gives you his life history. I'm Rav Zira. Mirish, originally, ki avina be'rav, when I was like a yeshiva guy, mishatafna be'priti, v'adei u'shpizo. When I was a yeshiva guy, I used to participate by giving money to my host, and that money would go towards the Neros Hanukkah. But Basar didn't see the yisusa. Now that I'm married, apparently he was still in yeshiva, he was still my host. I mean, I would say, Hashavadei lo tzirechna. I don't have the light. To come out of the Kiyolai to give the go by Sai. Because my wife is lighting for me. So Rabbi Zera originally, when he was a single yeshiva bachar, he would be obligated to participate in the host family lighting. Once he got married, he had a wife at home, his wife would light for him, and he didn't light himself. Great. So feel free to ask questions whenever people want.
He lighted himself when he was a bachor, you think?
He didn't light by himself, he just contributed.
Okay.
So last week we dealt with whether or not he was only able to contribute or he could have lit by himself or whatever it was. This week we're going to deal with the second half of the statement. Then now that he's married, he didn't light at all, but his wife lit for him.
So his obligation is fulfilled by the fact that he has a household, his wife lights candles for the household, and now he's absolved of his obligation.
That's certainly what it seems like. That he didn't light because he had a household and his wife was lighting for him in their house. So we're going to deal with two basic questions. Number one is, did Rav Zera have any other options? Let's say he wanted to light himself. Could he have lit himself in his host's house? You might say, if he was able to, it's always better to do mitzvahs yourself, so why wouldn't he? So of course he would light for himself if he was able to. The very fact he didn't light himself indicates that he's not even able to light himself. You're automatically yotzei with your wife's lighting. Second approach is, I know, Rav Zera is being cheap. He didn't want to pay the money. He didn't want to expend the money on the candles and the oil and things of that sort. And therefore he was yotzei with his wife's lighting. But if he wanted to, he could have lit for himself in his host's house by himself. And we'll see, this becomes a very, very important question, halacha l'maisa. And we'll see that it's really going to be debated in the Rishonim. Yeah.
What's the distinction of by himself? Does that mean it would be preferable for him to give money to the host of the house to participate in the mitzvah, or he should physically light his own candle?
So that, I'm sorry you weren't here last week. That was last week's share. So one of those two options. But either way, he would participate himself in the mitzvah.
It's on why you took.
Is there a distinction or there's okay?
Yeah. So the first Rishon we're going to quote is the Truma Zadashen. Truma Zadashen was a late Ashkenazi Rishon. He called his book Truma Zadashen because guess how many Chubas there are? 354. What's the Gematria of Deshen? 354. How was he able to get it so exact? He wrote the questions himself. It was the genre was to write Svarim in the question-answer format, because nobody was asking him the questions he wanted to be asked. He had all these Shibboleth HaRa, he wanted to write things about them. So he wrote them himself, and he responded. You see him like a kid, it's like a five-year-old, like, I want to write a Sefer Truma Zadashen. I hope I get 354 questions. In the end, I guess it didn't happen. Anyway, so somebody asked him the following question. Aksanai Shu Nasoi, the fourth source. A guest who's married, Rashayu the Hantik with Rakha Chutzibe So Ogar. Could he light for himself or not? So, Tshuva. You read the Sarakal Tatek Batavar. We're not sure. Echad Miakdolim Hora, one of the great rabbis of my time period, Paskin, the Rashayu the Hantik with Rakha. If you're a guest, even though you could be Yotzei with somebody in your house who's lighting, you're allowed to light for yourself with a Rakha. How do we know this? The Amar Avogav Darminan B'Gemara Keva D'Nisivna Amina Hashta Bazei Lo Tzrichna. Even though the Gemara says, now that I'm married, I don't have to light by myself, Haynu D'Lo Mechayev. It only means I'm not obligated to light. Avo Iba Imanzi L'Havik. But if you want to light, you could light. And what's his motto? How do we know that even if you don't say your basic obligation in Eros Chanukah, you're still allowed to light for yourself?
The Mahadrin.
Exactly. What happens in every single Ashkenazi household? In every single Ashkenazi household, you would say your basic obligation with one candle, and still each member of the house lights for themselves with a bracha. So why should our Aksanai, why should Rav Zira, our nice yeshiva bakar, be any different? Fine. That's issue number one. Point number two. The ode, Ikalamikha Ashtama Mishtula in Shebeseh, You don't know who to trust. Granted, your wife, your husband is at home. Your kids are at home. You tell them time and time again. You text them. You call them. Light for me. How do you know they're actually going to light for you? You want to make sure you don't say the mitzvah. So you want to be lachmeris. You light for yourself. So those are the two reasons that Truma Zadashen gives as to why you should light for yourself, even though somebody is ostensibly lighting for you at home.
Yeah. Why is the second reason the reason you accept
And that's exactly what the Truma Zadashen says. He says, the second reason I don't like. Number one, you shouldn't be able at least to light with a bracha. And number two, where in the world do we get this idea from? You can't trust family members. Halakhically speaking, you're always able to trust family members. Let's say you come home. Your kid, your son, your daughter, your wife tells you that the food is kosher. You trust them. You trust that they went to a kosher supermarket and bought the food there. Let's say somebody comes home, a family member tells them, I was mafresh truma from this food. So again, you trust them. You assume things are working halakhically in a halakhically viable way in your household. So you can assume that here as well. Assume that the wife, husband, son, daughter at home live for you. But the Truma Zadashen says he likes the first reason. Skip down to the second column, the underlying part. Amnam mitam hadrin. Because we have this idea of Mahadran anyway, so therefore, our guest is allowed to light himself with a bracha. Just like if he was at home, he would be able to light with a bracha, so too, if he's a guest, he's able to light with a bracha. Great. And that's the way the Truma Zadashen paskens, that a guest, if he wants to, could light for himself with a bracha. Then the question becomes, so why didn't Rav Zera? So it's not. It's a question. Yeah, Kobe.
We already established that they have the same level of cube, or that she's allowed to yotze him, or you said even children?
Well, children, let's assume that children are above our mitzvah. If they're below our mitzvah, so then it becomes more of an issue. If we assume that they can't be mostly the family.
Okay.
But wife and husband have equal levels of obligation in terms of this issue, at least, and they could both be motzi each other. Great. So that's the Truma Zadashen. This gets quoted in the Beis Yosef by the Shulchan Aruch. He says, the second source, Kashav Kastav Shum Asbeshen, the Aksanai Shunasul, he brought to the Havdik of Arik, Mishim Hitler, Shapar Dami, if he wants the life for himself, he's good. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? V'lein Yara, the aim the smoke al zeh, l'varek v'rakash and etzrika. Don't do it. Don't, if you're an Aksanai, if you're a guest, and you have somebody in your house who's lighting on your behalf, you should not light with a bracha. Right. So that's the machlokas in terms of the Aksanai.
Because he's holds like Sephardi. I mean, like, they hold like him.
Exactly. So what's your first name again? I'm sorry?
Ari.
I'm sorry, I forgot your name. But what Ari is saying is that this machlokas about Aksanai, about a guest, reflects itself in not only in the issue of guests, but in the issue of how every Sephardi or Ashkenazi household functions on every night of Hanukkah. So I think most people here are Ashkenazi. So most people here assume that even if one person lights the first candle, subsequently each and every individual person lights their own menorah with a bracha, even though the Gemara says that Neri Shuvesa works. One candle fulfills the obligation of everybody in the house. Are there any other Sephardim here besides Yosef? Or is there a resident Sephardi? So Yosef will tell you, in the Sephardi household, that I assume you're the only one who lights?
Yeah.
In the Sephardi household, only one person lights the menorah.
And if I'm somewhere else, only they light.
They light.
I don't light.
You don't light. Sephardim assume, we just saw it in the Beis Yosef, the Shulchan Aruch, that once the basic obligation is fulfilled, once Ner Ishu Beisu happens, nobody else is allowed to light with a bracha. Once Ner Ishu Beisu happens, that's it. Nobody else lights, even one person lights the entire household, and nobody else lights with a bracha.
That's across the board, whether it's your family or not your family.
And whoever you're being yotzei with, you don't light subsequently. And if you're the only case you would light, if you're a real Aksanai and don't have anybody else back in your house, you're a single guy traveling around without a house, and then you end up in somebody's house for Hanukkah. So then, that's the basic rule of the Gemara. Aksanai is chayiv lahavdik. So then maybe you could light independently. But as long as you're part of some type of family structure, some type of house, and somebody else is lighting in that house, you're yotzei, and that's it. You can't light independently and make a bracha.
So the Sephardim still give the penny or quarter?
Right. Because of the Aksanai issue, it was then, like we saw last week, and maybe that's the way for you to become part of the house. But up until that point, you're just not part of the house.
If you didn't, then
you may not be able to the mitzvah at all. Because
you still can't light by yourself.
Well, unless your wife is
lighting. You might be able to... I mean, if you're an Aksanai, so then you're not officially part of that household yet. You're just passing through, let's say. So then you might have your own independent obligation to light. So you have to light yourself. Or give the money, one of those two options.
So if you didn't give the money, then even if you're Sephardi, then you would light fire.
Right. Unless you happen to somehow or other make that house into your house. Like if you're sleeping there for a Shabbos, let's say. That's something we'll discuss next week. At what point, do you turn from an Aksanai to a Ben Bias? Let's say you're there for an evening. Let's say you're there for dinner. Let's say you're there for sleeping over. Let's say you're there for a weekend. So at what point do you become part of the bias? So we'll just foreshadow. Most people can assume if you're there for a Shabbos, you're sleeping over, so then you become part of that bias, and therefore you would be able to say with your parents, in-laws, whatever.
Right. Sleeping over is one of the major things.
Yeah.
Major conditions.
Yeah, so we'll see that next week. So what does this machlokas reflect? Why do Ashkenazim allow each and every individual person to make a bracha for his own lighting, both the Aksanai and the actual members of the house? And why do Sephardim say no? Why do Sephardim say that once you're Yotzei with the basic level of obligation, nobody else could light their own menorah or make a bracha? What's the lundus? What's the conceptual underpinnings of these two approaches? So, there are a number of ways to go. But one way is to connect it back to our basic models of mitzvahs near Hanukkah. How does it work? How does Nero Shubeso function? How does it work that we all have this obligation to light Nero's Hanukkah, but one candle suffices for our entire household? So in the first shir, we develop two basic approaches. If you assume it's a chovas hayachid, each individual person is really obligated to light himself, so then the only way, or one of the only ways, that one candle can suffice for the entire household is through some sort of concept of shlichus. Everybody, each individual member of the house, implicitly appoints the father, the mother, the sister, the brother, whoever is lighting, to light on their behalf. You don't have to explicate this, because it's just assumed. And Neru Shubeso takes place. So that's one approach. If each individual person is really obligated, so Neru Shubeso, one candle sufficing for the entire house, works through Shlikos, through each member of the household, appointing that person to light on their behalf. If you assume that it's a chovas habayis, that really each individual person is not obligated in Neru Hanukkah, the household as a whole, or this physical structure, requires a candle. So then you don't need shlichus to fulfill the obligation. You were never obligated in the first place. The family as a unit, the house as a unit, as a structure, was the subject of the obligation. So the Sfas Emes and Shabbos, we're not going to read inside, but he says that's exactly the issue of what's going on between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim. Ashkenazim are assuming that really, fundamentally speaking, it's a chovas hayachid. Each individual person is obligated to light his own Hanukkah candles.
They have to, not just allowed to.
No, so they have to. So why does Ner Bishabesa work? Why does the Gemara assume that one candle suffices for the entire family? Because everybody's appointing that one person as their shliach, as their proxy, as their agent to light. Yeah, but if they choose not to, if they want to light for themselves, so since, fundamentally speaking, they're obligated themselves individually, there's nothing wrong. When the first person in the family lights, everybody is having in the back of their mind, thinking, I don't want to be yotzei with this person. I want to be yotzei with my own candle, with my own lighting, because I'm independently chayiv in Neru Hanukkah. And that's why each individual member of the household is able to light his own menorah with a bracha.
He's able to, or he has to? That's what I'm getting confused
on. So the Gemara assumes he doesn't have to. Practically speaking, one candle suffices an entire family, but he wants to be firm about things. The Gemara says, Mahadran, everybody should light, or you should have one candle per person per household, whatever it is.
But that's only if you're Ashkenazi.
Right, so the issue is how to interpret that Gemara. The Gemara says, Neru Shabbos, so it's a basic obligation, one candle per house. Mahadran is Neru Kol Echad V'Echad, one candle per person. Mahadran, Minah Mahadran, is Mosif Holech, you increase candles every night. So that's like the third level, and that's what most people do nowadays. Right, Mechogos Tosfos Tosfos Rambam, what that means. So we'll get there in a second. But, so if we're assuming, so Ashkenazim are assuming, then Neru Ishubesu functions through Shlichus. And therefore, each individual person really has his own obligation. If he wants to, he could appoint one person in the household to light on his behalf. If he doesn't want to, he or she could light by himself. Sfaradim are assuming that Zechobas Abayas. That really, the obligation lies in the household as a whole. The house as a unit. And therefore, you don't have an option to say, I don't want to be Yotzei with the Falabiases, with my hosts, with this person's lighting. Because automatically, you're part of the family. You're part of the bias. You never had your own individual obligation in the first place. And therefore, you don't have the option to say, I don't want to be Yotzei with that person's lighting. I want to light by myself. Because you're never obligated in the first place. The family was obligated. And now the family has a candle. Well, I think my class. Sorry.
But, so, according to the idea that it's offering my shlichus, there's only little obligations, and we appoint the ball as the idea. So if I don't think anything, if we're in a household where nobody thinks anything at all, then everybody would have an obligation.
Right.
Which would be Mahadri.
Right. But there's always some type of assumed shlichus. Meaning Minastam is going to be assumed shlichus, unless let's say you put out your menorah beforehand, then you're going to light by yourself.
Okay. And that assumed shlichus is just because the Gemara says that.
Yeah. It's implicit.
So then in reality, in the situation that most of us are in who aren't married, if one roommate lights candles and the other roommates are
right.
They don't have to, or?
Right, so we dealt with how to define a bias or family structure also last week, it ends up that most poskim would assume, it seems like most poskim would assume that roommates don't, you can't like artificially form a bias. If they're financially independent, they're unrelated, financially independent, so then each person either has their own individual obligation, you might be able to chip in for a candle. If you're not chipping in money for a single candle, each person, somebody just lights the menorah, then Meshavur assumes that you're obligated to light yourself.
Can we understand the machlokas in terms of the other machlokas, whether you make a bracha on a minhag? Because it seems like if they could both assume that it's a chiyuv hayachid, but I'm sorry, they could both assume that you're already yotze with one candle, but Ashkenazim say you make a bracha on a ma'aseh mitzvah, which each individual person is doing.
Right, so you're saying that even if it's an individual's obligation, there still might be room to allow for you to be machmir on yourself, even...
No. No. I'm saying that even if there's not an individual,
okay,
that if you're already yotze with the Baal HaBayis, which the Gemara says you are, the Ashkenazim might still be able to make a bracha on the mitzvah because Ashkenazim make brachos on minhagim.
Oh. You're saying... Right, so over here, it's interesting, because it's not really a minhag.
I understand it's not a minhag, but I assume that the reason why they say brachos on minhagim, I mean, it's deeper. It's probably because you're still doing a ma'aseh mitzvah or something.
Right, so there's a machlokas achronim. If they just lower the bar for what you can make mitzvah brachos on,
okay,
or minhagim really are really there's a higher level to a higher level of obligation to keep minhagim than we naturally would think.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that if we were lowering the bar for Ashkenazim to make brachos in general, and as we see that you can make a brach on a minhag, so maybe this is another manifestation of that idea. It sounds very sounds possible.
So the way the Sephardic poskim understand kol echad be'achad means each and every household in that case, just to bring us back.
Meaning the Mahadran.
Yeah, the Mahadran would be kol echad be'achad household instead of kol echad be'achad. I know it's probably last week.
No, sorry.
I just assumed.
And anything I don't know. So another manifestation of this machlokas, according to the Sfasemis, is who's doing the lighting. So in Ashkenazim, let's say the Mahadran, the Gemara says basic level is ner ishu beso, one person lights for the entire household. Mahadran is ner the kol echad ve'echad, one candle per person. So who's doing the lighting for that for those extra candles? So Ashkenazim assume that each individual person lights his own candle. In Sephardi households, that's not what happens. If you would stop at the Mahadran level, which no Sephardim do, because we want the Mahadran and Mahadran nowadays, so Mahadran for Sephardim would be...
Father lights for each person.
Yeah, exactly. Father lights, or whoever happens to be lighting, lights for each person, one candle per person.
Yeah, but then wouldn't that, mess up the, pursuing... Like, let's say you have 12 kids or something. You're
going to
think it's 12
Sephardim,
you know. So, I mean... How does that, you have to light them in different places or something? What's the...
Meaning why is there a lack of pursuing Nisa? Because people won't know.
You don't know what day it is.
Yeah, you don't know
right, so that's why Mahadran and Mahadran is better than Mahadran. That's why it's the highest level, because you're able to tell what day it is. We're dealing with, Yosef, I think, was asking about the middle level.
No.
You wouldn't know what day it is.
Well, are you saying that in a Sephardi household that the father should light however many menorahs for however many people are in this house?
If you were stopping at the middle level of Mahadran near the Kol Echad Be'achad, so the father would light one candle per person every night. We assume most people nowadays do Mahadran Minah Mahadran, which is increase one candle every night. So Sephardim assume...
Wouldn't that mean that he has to light however many menorahs for the number of people?
Exactly. That's what would happen. But Sephardim assume that Mahadran Minah Mahadran means one menorah increasing one every night.
Yeah, they follow Tosfos.
So that's
what happens. It's not inclusive.
Okay, so that nullifies the second...
Tosfos is not inclusive.
Right. And the question is that the third level of increasing is working off the second level, mm-hmm, or working off the first level. The first...
But
Why do you say the father? Isn't it usually the woman of the household that does the life?
It could be.
Is there a Muslim?
No.
We won't try.
Only for Friday night, I guess.
Yeah, it could be.
Anybody could.
It could be the husband or the wife, or any of the kids, as long as they're over bar mitzvah. Great. So that's stage one. So the reason why this is important practically is for a number of reasons. Number one, just to figure out what happens in each and every household. Number two, is that the second part of the shiur, what we're going to do over the course of the next couple of minutes, is try to define when somebody leaves their parents' bias. When do you leave your parents' house and are no longer yotzei with their lighting? So if you're an Ashkenazi, even if you assume you left your parents' house, not much changes. Because even when you're in your parents' house, you're lighting individually. Now, if you're out of your parents' house, you can also light individually. Doesn't really matter, but as we saw, Ashkenazim always light individually anyway. If you're a Sephardi, then determining this point becomes extremely, extremely important. Because if you're still part of your parents' bias, you can't light by yourself. And if you're not part of your parents' bias, if you're now independent, you've created your own bias, then you have an individual or your own familial now obligation to light. So could a Sephardi person, let's say you have a Sephardi son, over the age of 13, sleeps over at his friend's house one night. Does he light his own menorah? Let's say he goes on a camping trip. Let's say he goes to some house, lives by himself for one night. Is he obligated to light? Let's say he's in yeshiva.
Camping.
Right, that is a machlokas if you're obligated to light for camping or not. Assuming you're obligated to light if you're camping. And there's no sakana when you're parents. Let's say you're on vacation from your parents. Or you're in yeshiva, or you're in college, or you're in school. You're in a dormitory, financially dependent, but you go back home when you have vacation. So are you still part of your parents' bias, i.e. are you obligated to light by yourself? There's also an afkamina for Ashkenazim. Just if you happen to not light one night, could you rely on your parents' lighting? Or are you really obligated to make sure that you're lighting every night when you're in yeshiva, when you're in seminary, or when you're in college? Whatever it is. So that's the issue. So the way this issue is introduced in the poskim is by a certain tension in Rabbi Zera. Let's go back to Rabbi Zera for a second. Rabbi Zera tells you what happened, what he did. He says, when I was a yeshiva bachar, when I was single in yeshiva, staying by a host, I would light by myself. Or meaning he would do something to discharge his own obligation. He would contribute financially to the host, to the host wedding. Once he got married, he didn't light at all. He relied on his wife's lighting. So the problem is, we were of Zera's parents. Let's say he was in yeshiva. So why couldn't he rely on his parents' lighting? The same way he relied on his wife's lighting when he was in yeshiva, after he got married, why couldn't he rely on his parents' lighting when he was single, before he established his own house, when he was in yeshiva? What happened to his parents? That's the basic question. So the way you resolve this tension between Rav Zera's married state, when his wife lived for him, and Rav Zera's single state, when his parents weren't lighting for him, where you draw the line between those two cases is going to determine at what point you leave your parents' house, or at least it very, very well might. I'm sorry if it's a bit vague, but we'll go through the shittos in a second. So the first opinion along the spectrum is it should as nidbaru. It's on the second page. I'm sorry people don't have it yet. This first hand is Rav Silverstein. He's a posik in Bnei Brak. I think he's, I don't know what I should say. He has the yeshiva in Bnei Brak. He's like 15 shuva svarim, a lot of svarim out there. So he was asked this question. Let's say you have people in yeshiva. Let's say you have somebody on a tiyul over Hanukkah. Is he obligated to light himself? So what was his answer? Bechleit can. If you're not home for one night, let's say an unmarried single child, if you're away from your parents' house for one night even, you're obligated to light yourself. You're no longer a part of your parents' bias for the purposes of Neros Hanukkah.
So Sephardi?
He's paskening both. He's going to say for Ashkenazim is not much of a difference, because either way most people light individually anyway. For Sephardim is going to be a major difference, whether or not they have to light, in the first place. But that's the last line. He says, "B'kolf and Hanogin Karamah always light anyway." Great. So what's his proof? How does he know that if you're away from home, you have to light? You're not part of your parents' bias. From Rabbi Zera. Because when Rabbi Zera was in yeshiva, when he was single, his parents weren't lighting for him. He had to light himself, or at least contribute to his host lighting. Great. So you see that when you're away from home, you have to light yourself.
But how can we assume that Rabbi Zera was holding
that? I'm sorry?
Where is Rabbi Zera?
Where is he from? He's from... He's from Babel. He actually made Aliyah later on in life. He actually fasted 40 days to forget Torah's Babel and be able to learn Torah's Eretz Israel. But we're assuming that he made Aliyah after he was married. He was still a kid. He was beyond Babel. Great. So Rabbi Zera was away from home. He had to light himself. What's the problem?
2 years.
Sorry?
2 years. Zera was permanently away from home.
Right. So there are two issues. Number one is that if Rabbi Zera was in yeshiva, presumably he was away from home for more than a night. He was in yeshiva on a long-term basis. Traveling wasn't so easy back in the old days. So we'll get there in a second. The second issue, thank you, the second issue is, so why when Rabbi Zera was married, was his wife able to light for him? What difference does it make if your parents should be lighting for you, or your wife or your spouse is lighting for you? Either way, you have a bias. You're a part of your parents' bias. You have a bias with your spouse. You're now away from home. So if your parents cannot light for you if you're away from home, so why should your wife or your spouse be able to light for you if you're away from home? So that's the tension that's here between Rav Zera's parents and his wife. His parents were not able to light for him, but his wife did. So Rav Silverstein assumes the rule of thumb is that if you're away from home, your parents cannot light for you. So why was his wife able to light for him? As the bull departs, he says, Amnam, he just says, your wife is different. Spouses are different. But somehow or other, if you establish your own household with a spouse, you're more part of your spouse's bias, more part of that bias, even if you're physically away from home, than with your parents. With your parents, as long as you're out of the house that night, you're obligated to light. With your own house, with a spouse, you can be away from home for a night and still be able to save lighting in your own structure, with your own family. And it makes sense intuitively that if you establish your own household, you're more connected with the people of your own household, if you're the mother, the father, the wife, the husband, and if you're part of your parents' household, which you're probably going to move away from at some point anyway.
Okay. But the fact that you haven't moved away.
Temporarily moved away.
Temporarily moved away.
Right, so it's still, I don't understand what, if you're dependent, so you're kind of stuck there even more than if you're married. I'm making like a marital comment, but like, I don't know, maybe you could.
Or at least in terms of where you're more connected to, if you're away from your parents' house for a night, let's say, or 6 months, whatever it is, you're less connected than if you're away from your spouse for a night. I mean, if you asked Rav Zera, when he was single, where's your house, he might have very well said yeshiva. If you asked Rav Zera when he was married, where's your house, he probably would have pointed to wherever his wife was, which hopefully was somewhere.
Are you sure he would have pointed to the yeshiva?
I mean,
obviously not, that's where his wife is waiting for.
I agree. So that's one opinion on the spectrum. This is the most extreme opinion, which may not be so normative. The next opinion along the spectrum is the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish is quoted in this book called Shammai Tova, which is a sefer put out by somebody on Hilchos Hanukkah. He said he was talking to the Chazon Ish about this, or just heard from the Chazon Ish, that if you're away from your parents' house for one night, that may not mean that you're away from their bias. You're sleeping over at a friend for a night, so you're still considered part of their bias, you're yotzei with their lighting. But if you're in yeshiva, and for Chazon Ish being in yeshiva meant really being in yeshiva, meaning you're going to be away from home for weeks at a time, even if you're financially dependent on your parents, and even if for intercessions, for being anonyms, you go back to your parents' house, that's your base, still, your bias is your yeshiva. And you can see how this could become an ideological statement as well. He says, V'kvim shamati v'shim maran chasnish, divnei ha-yeshiva, shim kvuim b'yeshiva, im lehem din smukam v'shulkan afiya. As long as you're kavua in yeshiva, I assume this means any institution, if you're in college, in a dormitory, or one of these places, even if you're financially dependent on your parents, if you're in the other place for a regular basis, even if you are financially dependent on your parents, you still have your own bias, and are obligated to light individually and independently of your parents. Great. And then he says, that's exactly why Rav Zera, when he was in yeshiva, couldn't rely on his parents. Because he was in yeshiva, he was there for a long period of time, and therefore he had to light himself. And Chazon Ish says, you look down at the last line over here, it says, L'fi divrei Chazon Ish, gam b'nei Sfarad, k'shem k'vuim b'yeshiva, tzrikam l'hadnik, medina k'lachad. Sephardi boys or girls, yeshiva or seminary, whatever it is, are obligated to light individually. They can't rely on their parents' lightings because they're no longer part of their parents' bias. They're now kavua in yeshiva. They're now kavua in college or wherever they happen to be. Right. So that's another shita along the spectrum. The Reb Zilberstein assumes if you're away from your parents' house for one night, you have to light it by yourself. The Chazon Ish assumes one night may not cut it. You're still part of your parents' bias. If you're away on a more regular basis, then you're no longer part of your parents' bias. But Yosef, can I ask you what you did when you were in yeshiva or in college?
I didn't light.
You didn't light.
Okay.
Right. So most Sfardim, from what I understand, don't light when you're in yeshiva, when you're in college. And the reason is because that's the way Rav Yosef passes. Sfardim aren't going to follow the Chazon Ish. They're going to follow Rav Avadya. So Rav Avadya has a very ingenious point of view. First, he quotes source after source after source that Rishonim assume, Kedarko Bakodesh, that even if you're in yeshiva on a regular basis, as long as you're financially dependent on your parents, A, and B, you go home on an infrequent basis, meaning for Shabbosos, for Beit Hazmanim, whatever it is, those two conditions are fulfilled. Number one, you're financially dependent. Number two, you go home every once in a while. So then you're defined as being part of your parents' bias. And you're Yotze with their lighting. And that's what I assume that's what most Sfardim do nowadays. Most Sfardim, when they're in yeshiva, they're in college, or if they have their own apartment, but they're financially dependent on their parents, and they go home, meaning they go to their parents' house at their home, and they go there on a fairly regular basis, so then they're going to be Yotze with their parents' lighting. Great. So what's the problem? The problem is Rav Zera. So why, when Rav Zera was in yeshiva, was he lighting himself? Rav Zera presumably was a good Sephardi. He was Iranian. He grew up in Babel. He followed all the psakim of Rabbi Avada Yosef. So why, the Benish guy, of course. So why would Rav Zera light by himself or contribute money if he is part of his parents' bias, even if he hasn't moved out yet? Yeah, Ariel.
He was totally financially independent.
Right, so that's one option. One option is to say, no, he was financially independent and he never went home. A regular yeshiva bachur nowadays goes home even on an irregular basis, in his mountains, whatever it is, he goes back home. And a standard yeshiva bachur nowadays is financially dependent on their parents. It's actually interesting, for the sake of honesty, I should point out, in this tshuva, Rav Avadya doesn't mention being financially dependent. In other places where he speaks about this, he does. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of it. It could just be he assumes that your average yeshiva guy is financially dependent on his parents. Great. So that would theoretically be one way to differentiate between the cases. Rav Avadya himself does something ingenious. If you look in the bolded lines in the parentheses, he says, "L'fizat tzarach lomar shavizir akodim sheisa isha lo hayohura v'nikam alav v'vesa." I am Tosfos Chulin, Memvav Menalef, Tirmasko, Rokai, Vidok. Dok means Dok Vitim Sanakas, meaning to go out and search a source. So So Rabbi says, Rav Zira, it must be that his parents were enlightening for him at home. Look in that Tosfos. So I have no idea what Tosfos says. Look in the Tosfos. Tosfos there infers from a number of Gemaras. Rav Zira's parents, who is his father, was a tax collector for the government. And he had a traveling job. He would travel from city to city and collect taxes and give the funds to the government. The Gemara says he was a nice tax collector. He wouldn't extort the people or do evil things. He would help the people out. The Gemara tells stories about Rav Zira's father being a tax collector. So Rabban Yosef says, Rav Zira's father wasn't lighting for Rav Zira at home. He was on the go. He himself wasn't able to light Neros Hanukkah. He was a guest in other people's houses. So of course Rav Zira had a light when he was a kid. Because his father, his parents, were always traveling. They were never lighting in their house. But a normal family, or a family that is set in one place, a family where you could assume somebody in the parent body is lighting in their regular house, then even if you're in yeshiva, or in college, or whatever it is, as long as you're financially dependent and go home every once in a while, you're going to be part of your parents' bias, and you're not going to be able to light with a bracha. And that's what I assume most of them do nowadays. Yeah, COVID.
For wife and his mom wife.
I don't know. It could be she used to travel around with
her. Traveling on like 9 pounds.
I'm sorry?
She traveled on like 9 pounds. That considered purpose.
But presumably he was an Aksanai. He was either on the go, which is an issue, or he was staying by somebody else's house, which case was
then.
He was an Aksanai.
But then he's Yotzeis, therefore representative was Yotzeis.
But it's
is that too many steps?
I haven't seen anything about that. I would assume it's too many steps.
I could see what that would be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would we use him as the case if his social circumstance was out of the ordinary?
That's an excellent question. It could just be Reb Zero is the one who has the statements. I mean, he was the one who commented about what he used to do.
Yeah.
It could be in Reb Zero's time, everybody knew his parents were the crap with the tax collectors.
Probably they did.
Nowadays, it takes everybody to save to figure it out. Yeah, I'm sorry.
If his Sephardi is away in yeshiva, let's say, and his parents go away, I don't know how it works. Do they light? Are they always light no matter where they are?
I don't... didn't come up with me. I actually called to make sure that they were at home.
So if they're not at home, do the kids have to light in yeshiva?
If for some reason the parents are not lighting, then the kid would have to light in yeshiva. Yeah.
Based on
Rav Adi's talk. The only reason they aren't lighting is because their parents are lighting for them wherever their parents live.
Would there be an issue with time zones?
Yeah, that's exactly part three.
I was just going
to
ask if you're
going to say I didn't think we were out of time to get there, but just to mention it quickly, time zones is an issue that's discussed by the Poskim. So if you look in this one line from Halacha Shlomo, from Shlomo Zalman or Rav Zalman, Hanukkah, he assumes, at the top line on the last page, that Nasa Acha Mivnei HaBayis Lundina Acheres, Yotze Lechovaso Malakash Madikin Veso, like somebody travels, you're with the home base. Afal Pish and Mamakom Shahuso in Atazman Halakakal. He goes one step further. He says, let's say not in Hanukkah, where you are. Let's say, how would this work?
If your parents are in Israel, you're in America.
Parents are in Israel, you're in America.
Right.
So when Hanukkah arrives in Israel and your parents are lighting for you, you're in America, it's still the afternoon, or maybe even the morning before, and it's not even Hanukkah yet. He still assumes that you're Yotzei with your parents lighting in Israel. And if you look in the footnotes in the bottom, which I didn't put here, which don't exist, sorry. Sorry about that. Rosh Hashanah Zalman explains that it's because the whole lumpus of this idea, the whole reason why you're Yotzei with your parents lighting, because it's a chovas habayis, it's a familial obligation. It's an obligation where the home base of the family is. So as long as where the bayis is, it's Hanukkah, you're fine. Even if individually you might be in a different place, and individually you might be in an area where it's not even Hanukkah yet. But because the chiyuv isn't on you as a person, it's on your bayis, and where your bayis is, it's Hanukkah already, so you're going to be fine. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch Yitzchak, it says Yitzchak Weiss, it was the Av Bezdin of Enoch Haredes. He's not so happy with this. He equivocates, goes back and forth, and he in the end says that you should be machmer. You should try to light. You should, technically speaking, you're probably yotze with your parents lighting, but you should try to light without a brapa, or you should try to befrita, or do something extra just to make sure that you're lighting for yourself, but don't make a bracha on your own lighting. I'm not sure what Ravadi himself says about time zones.
I believe when I look these up in Yeshiva and Yalkut Yosef, it says that you don't have to worry about time zones.
Don't have to worry about time zones. So it's really the same issue. One of is that it's a Chovas HaBayis, where the Bayis says you're fine.
I think so.
Are most posting today lenient as if somebody wants to light candles and they're not home? Would they advise somebody to or not to?
If you're Ashkenazi, they would definitely...
No, if you're Sephardi.
If you're Sephardi...
My first year in Yeshiva, I was advised to also give a pruta.
Really? But do you think that if you would have said, can I light my own, would they have said yes, or they would have said no if you don't normally light your own at home?
I might have lit my own the first year, and then I asked more questions, and then I gave a fruta, and then second year I didn't at all.
Because they said you shouldn't specifically?
Yeah, because that...
Really?
Because then I read more too.
Because the minhag is such.
Yeah.
And if you're lighting, you should definitely... Rabbani says you want to be machmir, you can light, but you shouldn't light
never
with a bracha. Don't light with a bracha.
Wow.
And that's what Viva has Sephardi friends in college or Yeshiva. They don't like. Yeah.
It's interesting. According to Osho Mozamar, when the candles are being lit, you haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. When Chanukah comes in, then you fulfill the mitzvah. By that time, the candles are probably already out.
Yeah. I was wondering what would happen. These cases are always very rare. Let's say the person died before Chanukah comes in America. So would he get checks in heaven for the mitzvah near Hanukkah?
Yes.
Because it's not even Hanukkah where he is.
Doesn't matter. He did a mitzvah presuming Nisa.
Right. His family.
You don't have to do presuming Nisa on Hanukkah. He did presuming Nisa. Who cares if it's Hanukkah? That's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to be mefarsim in the nes. You can only do it on Hanukkah.
He was able
to do it on Hanukkah in Israel. He wasn't on Hanukkah.
If you light candles at noon, you haven't done Pesumi Nisa.
Because there's no Pesumi Nisa because it's not Hanukkah yet.
That's what I'm saying.
You can only do Pesumi Nisa on Hanukkah. He did it on Hanukkah. Who cares if he was in Hanukkah or not?
The house
should.
I wasn't sure.
But,
it says something that I'm more comfortable with.
So just to summarize, what we saw today was that Ashkenazim, each person makes his own bracha, might be based on the fact that it's a Chovas Yachid. Sephardim, it's one bracha for the household, it might be more a Chovas Abayis. Sephardim in general are more family-oriented, they say.
About outer space?
If a Sephardi is in outer space, he would be able to see with his parents lighting his
own.
Ashkenazi is in outer space, so then he should light his own. And if you are in yeshiva, or in a college, or you have your own apartment, but you're financially dependent on your parents, and you view that as your home base, you go back there every once in a while, so then it's machlokas poskim. If you're really obligated yourself to light, or you could be able to stay with your parents lighting. So thank you.
Thank you.
Have a nice night.